Welcome to Bedtime Stories with Sun Sounds of Arizona. I'm Deborah, but some of my grandkids call me Nana Deb, so you can too. Hopefully you are all ready for bed. Snuggle up and let's read some stories before sleep. Sleep Tight Farm, A Farm Prepares for Winter, by Eugenie Doyle, illustrated by Becca Stadlander. On the first page is an oval-shaped picture. It shows brown ground and a fence with a rooster sitting on one of the fence posts. The sky is streaked gray. I wonder if it's morning or getting near the end of the day. And in the background are low rolling hills. The December days shorten and darken. We are busy putting the farm to bed. Across the pages of this part of the book, there's a long white fence in the front, and then there's more of that fence shown in the back of the picture. All the buildings that belong to this farm are inside those fence lines. There's a white farmhouse with a red chimney that has smoke coming out of it. There's a front porch on this farmhouse and a back porch, which is holding all the logs that have been cut for winter. We see a long, dark red barn in one part of the background with a white silo beside it. That's where they keep the corn or hay or other crops to save them and keep them dry. Then down near the front of the picture, there's another little building that almost looks like a miniature barn. It's brown colored, and it has the kind of doors on it that sometimes you see are on stables where horses are kept. Then behind it, on the other side of the road, is another long, low building with big, wide doors that look like garage doors. And behind that is a structure. It's made up of two tube-like buildings. I bet they are greenhouses. They're kind of rounded on the top and flat on the bottom. And that's where they could grow some more plants in the wintertime. And then there are brown stripes on the picture that indicate where a garden has been. The trees are all bare of leaves. And walking down the road, we see a person and a dog. With our crops mostly in, strawberries, raspberries, vegetables, honey, and hay, now is the time to prepare for deep frost, the coming wind and snow. Many hands make work light, Mom says. Now we're in the kitchen of the farmhouse. There's a man getting ready to go out the door. He's wearing jeans and a long-sleeved sweatshirt. He has red hair and a red beard. And in front of him is a black and white dog that looks a little bit like a border collie. On the rug, on the floor that's in this part of the picture, there's a girl with long reddish-colored braids, and she's putting on red boots while she sits on the floor. There's a white kitchen stove, maybe like what you have in your house, with a red tea kettle on it. But nearby, there's also a black pot-bellied iron stove with flames inside, and that's used to heat the room instead of a furnace. There is a stand that has logs on it that are going to be used for the winter to keep the house warm, and there's a coat rack with a bunch of coats and hats on it. It's very cozy looking. In the front of the picture on the other side of the page, there's a round table with four chairs and dishes that look like they've already eaten their breakfast, and a boy is cleaning those dishes up to take over to his mom, who is at the sink. The boy also has red-colored hair like his dad, and it's kind of curly. He has on blue jeans and a long-sleeve green shirt, but he's in his stocking feet. In other words, he's not wearing shoes, just his socks. And his mom is at the sink that looks out through a window at some of the other houses or buildings that are on the farm, and she's washing dishes. We shake straw over berry plants to blanket them from winter's frosty bite. Next April and May, they'll leaf out green and blossom white. In June, they'll give fruit. So red and juicy, we'll make jam and freeze berries to eat till summer comes again. We lick our lips, remembering. Good night, strawberries covered with straw. So those lines that I told you about, there were brown lines in the first picture, that's actually the where the strawberry plants are planted. And we can tell that the family is out taking the straw and sprinkling it all over the plants so they won't get cold when the really cold weather comes. The mom and the kids and the dad are all working in the field. We cut kale and chard and broccoli. We saw down tree-like Brussels sprout stems. We dig for the last carrots, beets, and potatoes to add to those stored in the barn. There, they await winter markets and our own winter meals. First page here shows all kinds of baskets and crates filled with these vegetables that we just read about. They look yummy. And the second page says, above in the hayloft, a mountain of harvested hay bales stands ready to sell. The fields rest brown and bare. Dad tills and plants a cover of oats and rye to protect and replenish the fields that gave us so much. Good night, fields, peaceful and still. In this picture, we're inside the barn with a horse and a cat. And we're looking out through a doorway across the road where there is a tractor moving along that Dad is planting other seeds. And then we can see other of the buildings, the red long barn that was in the first picture. And we can also see the hayloft up above where the cat is and the horse is. And it has those bales of hay in it. Dad cuts back the raspberries before wind and snow can crack the canes. We cart the old brush to burn. Goodbye to last year's twigs and leaves with their bugs and spots. Dad now has on gloves and a cap as he kneels down on the ground with a pair of cutters that are real sharp, and he's cutting back these raspberry bushes, and the boy is helping move the twigs away. The promise of late summer's plump fruit lies in roots tucked underground. Good night, raspberries, resting below. So they're going to put these things that they've cut under the dirt. We stack wood by the house and in the sugar house, too. It will heat our home all winter, and in early spring, it will fuel the fire that boils maple sap into syrup. So we're standing in the back part of their yard where those logs are piled that I told you about under the back porch. And both the mom and dad have axes and they're chopping the wood for their firewood. On the other side of the page, we see the kids carrying the firewood. And they're stacking it also in one of the other buildings, the one that looked like a little brown barn. Good night, stacked wood, waiting to work. Before the winter winds come howling, we secure the hoop house's plastic sides with ropes and bales of hay inside. We float sheets of white cloth over the baby greens till the New Year's thaw. Safe, undercover, rest little leaves with mouth-filling names like spinach, mizuna, tatsoi, arugula. Our winter salad greens will nap till stronger sun can wake them. So do you remember I told you there were two buildings that looked like tubes? Well, that's what they call the hoop house. And it is tubes that have been stretched and curved, so the roof or top part of them is curved, but the bottom part is flat on the ground. And across all that is plastic stretched that will keep the things under it dry and sort of warm. Last August, the hoop house grew so hot, we rolled up the sides and flung open the doors while picking tomatoes, melons, and heat-loving okra. Now we button up the perfect shelter for changing weather. Good night, hoop house, wrapped up tight. We board up chinks in the chicken coop and set a timer to give the hens the light they need to lay eggs all winter. We fluff the nests with hay, plug in the water heater, scoop fresh grain. We collect the day's eggs, fragile gifts from our friends. Good night, chickens, snug in your coop. So the chicken coop is that little brown building that I told you I thought maybe horses lived in, but it turns out it's chickens. And we can see through the doorway where the chickens have shelves that they each have their own nest. And some of them are sitting on those nests. Some of the chickens are outside where the girl, the daughter in the family, in her red boots, is sprinkling grain on the ground for them to eat. And the mother has a nail and a hammer, and she is repairing the holes that have happened in the wood of this chicken coop. Believe it or not, there's a cat sitting in the window of this chicken coop. Wonder what he's waiting for. And then outside the little fence that goes around the chicken coop is a horse out in the field. With bales of hay, we build a windbreak for the beehives and place a stone on each lid to hold it firm. We make the hive entrances smaller to keep roaming field mice out. Within each hive, a single queen lies in a cluster of maids working to keep her fed. In September, we harvested honey and wax, but left enough for the bees, who made enough for us. Good night, bees, sheltered and safe. This picture shows two different seasons. On one side, we are in the December weather, it's December weather. You can tell because of the way the trees look. And we see these stacks of hay making a wall around the three beehives. And the mother of the story is putting large rocks on top of them. In the other side of the picture, we see that it was still warmer. The leaves are green and still on the trees. And it shows the mother and dad in their beekeeper suits so that they're completely covered up and the bees can't sting them. And they have hats with screens that go all the way around so their faces are safe, but they can see out of them. And in this picture, we also see that they've pulled the wooden trays out of the hives where they can collect the honey and the wax that the bees have made. The farm stand is stocked for the holidays with fresh eggs, greens, and roots, onions and garlic braids, decorative corn, honey, and maple syrup. There's plenty for us and plenty to sell. Now, the farm stand is a little brown wooden building that also has sort of a porch on it, but there's a counter under that porch and a banner that goes across the front of the porch roof that says Starlight Farm Stand. There's a sign that has a list of prices for the honey and for the maple syrup and other signs that show what the apples and squash and potatoes are going to cost. The girl is making braids out of the garlic. And the boy is sitting down drinking some hot chocolate, it looks like, while he watches the cat. On the other side of the page, we have a different part of the story. Mom and Dad move planter, cultivator, tiller, and baler into the equipment shed, a shelter from rust and cold. The tractors go in last. Good night, farm. So now this is the building that I mentioned that had two big garage doors. Well, now we know why. Because all this farm equipment on wheels has to be driven in there or taken in there. The tractor and the baler is how they get the hay and put it into bales. And let's see, the tiller is a machine that goes across the ground and stirs up the earth so it's easier to plant. The fire jumps in the wood stove. We feast on homegrown treats, vegetable soup, and berry pie. We pull clinking lights from a box, untangle, to hang on the porch. Look, Mom says, the rising moon, the bright sway of stars in the sky. We light beeswax candles to soften the longest night. So they're getting ready for a holiday, don't you think? And the girl and the boy are each putting colored lights around the windows. The dad is putting lights on the porch roof and up even on the roof of the house. And the mom is upstairs and she's lit a candle in the window. The dog is looking out of one of the windows too. I wonder where the cat is. The farm is ready for down quilts of snow. The shh of the wind. Dad tucks us in. Good night, farmers. Sleep tight. And now the picture looks very much like it did at the very beginning, except everything is covered with snow. The roofs of all the buildings, even the silo, have snow on them. The hoop houses have snow on them too, because the plastic has been pulled across those poles to keep it warm and dry inside. And back in the distance, there's snow collecting on the rolling hills that are behind the farm. On the last page, we see the girl and the boy asleep in their beds with nice warm quilts on top of them. The boy has a stuffed rabbit who's sleeping in his bed. And at the window, we can see the snow falling outside. Sleep tight, farm. Now here's something that the author wrote to us to tell a little bit more about this story. Every winter, when the farm work has slowed, I write letters to a neighboring class of third and fourth graders. I write about our chickens, the seeds we are ordering, the growers' meetings we attend, the maple trees we tap, and the plants we start in the greenhouse. The children write back asking questions. Do you have a dog? Do you like farming? What is your favorite food to grow? Then in May, the children and their wonderful teacher come to the farm for lunch and a visit. They pull weeds, gather eggs, harvest the first strawberries and radishes, and explore the farm. They are such knowledgeable visitors. They know where each food in their lunches comes from. They know that the food they eat at every meal comes from a farm. They can see that a farm is a lot of work, but for every way that we take care of the farm, it returns the gift. A fresh egg for breakfast, sweet fruit all summer, a place to share and call home all year round. The end. Little Polar Bear and the Whales by Hans De Beer. Lars, the little polar bear, lived at the North Pole in the middle of snow and ice. So far north, the winter is long and dark. But today it was spring at last. How nice and warm, thought Lars. Not everyone was happy about the warm weather. It's too warm, Lars' father grumbled. But Lars liked it. The melting snow made some fine pools, and he enjoyed a morning bath in one of them. The picture shows a big field of snow, but there are little oval shapes in it that are colored green, and they are where water has come through up through the snow. The little polar bear is sitting in one of them. His toes are sticking up, and he's grinning. He's leaning back on his front paws. After his bath, Lars took a walk in the spring sunshine. He sniffed the fresh air. Small plants and flowers were sprouting here and there through the melting snow. And now we can see the little bear walking on all fours, just like polar bears do. And by the way, you know, a polar bear is a bear that's almost completely white, so he blends in with the snowy landscape. Behind him, there's some purple-colored mountains, and there's a pinkish and orangish sky. And in the ground, we see little yellow flowers popping up out of the snow. But what was this? There was something strange poking out of the ice. There were ropes and masts and sails. It was a shipwreck. Lars scrambled down to investigate. Now we can see part of this ship that is stuck in the snow and ice. It's an older kind of ship, a sailing ship. Up on a snowy bank at the top of the picture, Lars is peeking down at the ship. Who's there? Squawked a voice. Lars jumped. A strange bird was perched on the edge of a rowboat, spreading his wings.
Looks like you've never seen a cormorant before, said the bird.
Oh, no, sir, I haven't, said Lars politely. The bird chuckled.
That's because I'm not usually around here, he said, but it's been so warm, I just kept coming north. My name's Conrad, by the way, Connie, for short.
I'm Lars, said Lars. What are you going to do here?
Go fishing, of course, said Connie. I'm going to fish with the white whales.
You mean the belugas? Said Lars, amazed.
Yes, said Connie. "Why don't you come with me to the big bay and meet them? You run on ahead. It's too hard for me to walk in this slush. I'll fly instead. Meet you there." Now, Connie, the cormorant, is a bird that's kind of tall, actually, for a bird. His feathers on his head and down his neck and on his back and his wings are dark-colored, gray or almost brown, and his face and his tummy are white. He has black feet. While they waited for the belugas at the big bay, Connie explained about the shipwreck. "That was an old whaling boat," said Connie. "In the olden days, they sailed all around the world, killing whales."
"How awful," said Lars.
Suddenly, Lars heard a loud splash. "The belugas!"
"Don't be frightened," said Connie.
"They're all very nice." So we see Lars and Connie sitting on some ice near the water, waiting. And then in the next picture, we see about 9 or 10 belugas heading right towards the part of the ice where the bird and the little polar bear are sitting. In this picture, the belugas' bodies that are under the water look pale blue, but some of them have their heads already peeking up out of the water, and there their skin is white. Before long, Lars was diving and playing right in the middle of the belugas. He made friends with a young whale named Bella. Now, beluga whales, in case you didn't know, their heads are rounded and a little bit smaller than the rest of their body, a little different from some other kinds of whales that we see pictures of. And the baby whales in this picture have brown spots on their backs. All at once, Connie leaped onto a chunk of ice.
"Look out!" he squawked. "Quick, get away! You're in danger!"
He sang this to Lars and the whales. A huge gray whale suddenly rose up beside them. He looked as big as a mountain.
"The bird is right,"
he said in a deep, rumbling voice.
"Who are you?" Lars asked.
"I'm Moby," said the giant sperm whale. "A whaling ship is after me. It's been following me for days. We're all in danger."
"What are we going to do?" cried Bella.
"I have an idea," Lars shouted. "There's a little bay behind those glaciers. The entrance is too narrow for a ship, but you'll be able to get in. You can hide there until the ship goes away."
The whales raced for the small bay of water. The entrance was narrow, but Moby managed to squeeze in too.
The whales hid under the water as the whaling ship drew closer. Lars and Connie hid behind some rocks.
"They're not supposed to kill whales anymore," said Connie angrily.
At sunset, the ship turned on its searchlights, but the whales' heads just looked like more rocks and ice floes. The next morning, the ship was far away on the horizon. The whales resurfaced. They were safe.
"Hooray for Lars!" they cried.
Now, the ship that they're talking about this time is a modern ship. It doesn't have the sails on it like the old one that was wrecked that Lars found at the beginning of the story. It has lots of interesting equipment and cranes on board, and I'm sure that those are used when they can catch a whale. But in the picture, we see all the whales submerged, that means under the water partially, except for the top of their back, which does look like little white rocks or ice floes floating on the water. And the big whale is completely under the water, except for a tiny, tiny bit that looks like a long gray rock. But soon there was more trouble. In the warm spring air, the ice had been melting. Now part of the glacier was falling off. Large chunks of ice crashed into the water. The way out of the bay was blocked. The whales were trapped.
"How will we ever get out of here again?" Moby groaned.
"How indeed," said Connie.
So we see all of the whales, the little belugas and the medium-sized belugas and the great big giant Moby whale. And then we see the bear and the bird, and they're all
on this little bay that has been blocked by pieces of glacier that fell. They're all very worried looking.
Connie, I've got it,
Lars shouted.
The shipwreck sails. That's the solution, but we'll need my mother and father to help.
While Connie flew off to get Lars' mother and father, Lars started untying a huge sail. When they came, he told his parents what he had in mind. Lars' father was very proud.
What a smart young bear we have, he said, just like his father.
Then the polar bears dragged the heavy sail to the bay. The sail is made out of canvas. They stretched the sail across the ice dam. Lars wet it to make it slippery.
You can slide right over to the other side, he told the whales. Swim fast!
The first belugas took a run up and whoosh! Over the sail they went into the open sea. But Bella was frightened.
I'm too little, she cried.
You can make it, Lars encouraged her. The sail is nice and smooth. Soon Bella and her mother were over the sail and into the sea. Finally, only Moby was left in the bay.
Here I come, he rumbled,
and with an enormous leap and a gigantic splash, the giant sperm whale was over the top. What a celebration there was then. Moby tossed Lars up in the air while the happy belugas swam around them.
Would you just look at that, said Connie
to Lars' mother and father. Now Lars' mother and father are up on the shore, and the bird is talking to them, and Lars is up in the air bouncing in the water that comes out of the large whale's spout. And then it was time to say goodbye.
Come back and play again,
Lars called to Bella.
We will,
Bella promised. On the way home, it began to snow.
What a pity, said Connie. It was so nice and warm.
But Lars' father was happy.
We like the cold, he said,
and Lars, the little polar bear, agreed. The mother and father polar bears are walking across the snow, and flakes are falling down, very large flakes out of the sky. On one of the bears rides little Lars, and on the other one lies Connie the cormorant. The end.
Thank you for listening to our bedtime stories. Sweet dreams.